Hey, this is Kevin Sorbo here, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. And really, do some thinking, seriously.
We're on the road, we're going home, to the place where wild nerds roam, with pretty girls and dudes and kids, going to cons is our.
Hey man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
Hey everybody, and welcome to Thinking Outside the Long Box. My name is Thomas Strange, and I'm with my best friends since I was like 12 years old, Tom, Josh, and Mike. Mike, how you doing and what you drinking?
I am doing excellent tonight, and I am drinking a classic Sugar and Spike. It's ginger ale and vodka.
Sugar and Spike, that sounds delicious. Tommy, how you doing and what you drinking?
I am doing fine. I am drinking some Woodford Reserve.
Sounds good. I've had that. Josh, you just passed a kidney stone, so congratulations for no longer having to drink nothing but cranberry Lambrics. How you doing and what you drinking?
I am cleaning out the bottom of the beer fridge, but I found some nice vanilla Java Porter at the back. And I'm doing fine, thanks.
That sounds delicious. I am drinking what's going to be featured in our upcoming comic book on superhero and sci-fi drinks. This is called a Flex Capacitor. It is 88-proof rum with Doc Brown's original cream soda. So today we're going to be talking about a little bit about Wonder Woman, a great character and a timely character to talk about because the movie's coming out just next weekend. It'll probably come out when this podcast comes out. So, Mike, why don't you tell us a little bit about Wonder Woman's history, and I'll talk a little bit about her creator and some of her powers.
Wonder Woman first debuted in All-Star Comics number 8 on October 25th, 1941. She was created by Charles Moulton, also known as William Moulton Marston, and also H.G. Peters was the artist. Princess Diana of Themyscira was created by her mother, Queen Hippolyta, who was praying to the gods for a child. She formed her out of clay, and the gods brought her to life. She was brought up with the rest of the Amazons, learning how to fight in literature and the arts, and one day a plane crashed outside of Paradise Island. She swam out and rescued Steve Trevor, a United States Army intelligence officer. She competed with the rest of the Amazons and won the right to return Steve Trevor to the world of man, where she could help fight the evil Nazis who were afraid going to take over the United States, which was the last bastion of hope for women gaining independence and equal rights. She starred in her own series called Wonder Woman, and she was also the lead character in Sensation Comics, as well as being originally a secretary for the Justice Society of America, but later on, as the story progressed, she became a full-fledged member. In the Golden Age, she had a lot of fighting Nazis, as most people did, because it was during World War II. And even after that, her stories were always devoted towards the feminist perspective and showing that women were more enlightened than men. And I know you're going to get more into the creator's philosophy on that. Charles Moulton is listed as the creator, although that's a pseudonym. And in addition to William Moulton Marston writing, because there were so many Wonder Woman stories coming out, there were a number of writers, but they always credited Charles Moulton as the writer, even though it was sometimes female writers who were doing the writing for Wonder Woman. When Marston dies, Robert Kanninger, who had been the editor, takes over the writing responsibilities, and he drives Wonder Woman for the next 20 years and leads her through the Silver Age of comics. She managed to survive even when all the other superheroes had waned. The only three superheroes whose comic continued through the Golden Age up to the Silver Age were Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. Although
There's also a reason why Wonder Woman survived and a couple others fell by the wayside. What is that, Mike?
That is because if they did not publish a Wonder Woman comic, then the rights would be reverted over to the Marston family if they didn't publish a Wonder Woman comic at least every month.
That is correct. And that's kind of a good incentive to keep publishing those comics.
Wonder Woman's adventures continue. She fights a number of different horrible villains in the Silver Age, and they give up on her finally, and they start writing stories about her as a girl and then eventually as a baby. It's really bad stuff. However, eventually Caniger gets sick, and when he leaves, they replace him with a series of other writers. They didn't really have any cohesive idea for the Wonder Woman storyline. They just decided, okay, we're going to change her around totally, and kind of like they had done for the Batman character with making him in 1971, making him more dark and more of the super spy, more James Bond-like. They decided to make Wonder Woman more like Emma Peel from the Avengers. They depowered her and gave her a Chinese martial arts blind master named I Ching to teach her martial arts. She opened up a clothing boutique and was kind of an international spy, but not really. And it was written by people who had heard of the word feminism but didn't know what it actually meant, because she still pined over every guy that she met in the comic book. It was really bad. Just as they were starting to get in socially relevant storylines, Caniger came back. He was pissed. He didn't like what they had done with Wonder Woman, and he killed all of the characters related to the storyline in one bloody issue and gave her amnesia, so she couldn't even remember that time.
That's a great way of just stopping it dead. But he killed everybody. He killed I Ching. He killed everyone who was associated with that era. That's burning some bridges.
Yeah, he did not want that storyline to come back by anybody. although it has kind of come back because in the form of Dr. Cypher, who is one of her major villains at this time. She's in the new Wonder Woman Rebirth, but we'll talk about that later on. And after that, Wonder Woman is not sure if she belongs in the Justice League. They go through the 12 trials of Wonder Woman, and eventually they throw her into the Justice Society and take her back to World War II, because at the time the Wonder Woman TV show was popular, and so they just kind of mess around with Wonder Woman for quite a while. Then when Crisis on Infinite Earths happened in the 1980s, they decide to totally reboot Wonder Woman again, and this time George Perez is in charge of rebooting her. They take away her whole origin story that she was fought in World War II. Now it's her mom that had fought in World War II and was a member of the Justice Society. And Diana is now coming into the modern world to be a representative, an ambassador for Paradise Island or Themyscira. Later on, a number of other writers take over, and not a lot happens for Wonder Woman. They try to develop a large rogues gallery, but it's just nothing really takes, in my opinion. However,
there's one time where Wonder Woman says to the Flash, "Do you know why I don't have a big rogues gallery? Because they don't live long enough to become a gallery." That's one of my favorite Wonder Woman quotes of all time. Wonder Woman takes care of her villains. She doesn't have a huge list of enemies because those enemies don't tend to last that long.
Yeah, they also, you know, she tries to really, like, Cheetah's probably one of her greatest enemies, but she's always trying to cure Cheetah of her curse rather than punish Cheetah for what all the evil that she's doing, because she feels that she's not in control of herself. And there have been a number of different reiterations of Cheetah over the years. The best one, I think, is in the new Rebirth title, which, again, we'll talk about in a minute. When the New 52 happens, Brian Azzarello takes over, and he changes Wonder Woman's story for the first time. Instead of her being made of clay and brought to life by the gods, they now redo the origin that that was all a lie, and she is actually the daughter of Zeus and Hippolyta, and Hera now hates her and becomes one of her major villains. And this Ares, who had traditionally been a villain, actually considers Diana his niece and is a very nice uncle to her, and she ends up becoming the god of war. Very well done. And then when Rebirth happened, they decided to take all those conflicting origins and make it into a storyline, which Greg Rucka is doing. But let's not talk about that. Let's talk about the creator of Wonder Woman. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, I'll talk a little bit about William Moulton Marston, a very interesting figure, a man who was a little bit obsessed with the truth. He was a student at Harvard University, and he invented the sphygmometer. The sphygmometer eventually leads to the invention of the systolic blood pressure test, and that leads to the polygraph test that was invented by John Augustus Larson in Berkeley, California. But Augustus Larson says that without the sphygmometer and William Marston's early work, he probably wouldn't have gone all the way to the modern polygraph. So the modern polygraph can take its lineage directly from William Moulton Marston. You can see that influence in Wonder Woman's magic lasso of truth that she uses so very often. One thing we didn't talk about is that, you know, William Moulton Marston was a little bit of a alternate lifestyle guru for his time. He lived with his wife, and he had a few other women who also at other times lived with him. And he was very much into the bondage discipline thing. One of the people that lived with him for a while was actually Margaret Sanger. His biography is just a who's who of women of the time. So do read his biography. It is insanely interesting. He was so much into this bondage and that women were superior to men because they had the ability to submit to men if necessary, that we have what's called the Golden Age Challenge. And what is that Golden Age Challenge, Mike?
If you can look through three pages of any Wonder Woman Golden Age comic and find them without either bondage, spanking, or somebody being tied up, then we will give you a cookie.
Yes, and we haven't had to give out a cookie yet, have we?
No, we have not. It's impossible.
We have not. Those early comics are very thinly disguised. Well, maybe not thinly disguised bondage and spanking comic books as much as they are just showing what was going on in William Moulton Marston's mind. That being said, his wife was a very empowered woman in her own way. She had gone to college. She got her degree. He believed that women really were superior to men, but a big part of that was that women could submit to men where men had trouble submitting to women. So it's kind of a weird lifestyle / psychology thing that's going through Marston's writing. And that kind of is part of Wonder Woman's power. Wonder Woman is stronger than men, but if she's tied up or bound by men, she loses her powers. That happens if her, at one point it's said that if her magic bracelets are ever welded to each other, she loses her powers. That got changed to just being tied up. She loses her powers. The bondage thing plays all the way through and also goes through a lot of other things. Wonder Woman is constantly tying up her opponents with her magic lasso. That's her magic weapon. She is almost as strong as Superman. She is almost as fast as the Flash. She is smart, intelligent, one of the greater superpowered characters in the DC universe, not just one of the greater powered female characters. I can't really think of another female superpower character that is as powerful or nearly as the longevity of Wonder Woman. Mike, can you think of anyone on her level?
No, not as far as power or popularity goes. She's heads above all the other female superheroes.
Which makes it, great that she's getting her own movie finally. Some of those early characters are showing up in that movie. Etta Candy, and a character that was kind of her sidekick for a long time. Partly a comic sidekick, part, serious sidekick for a while. Etta Candy is part of William Moulton Marston's wife's experience in college. A lot of that college experience comes through with Etta Candy and some of the girls that are at the college that sometimes help Wonder Woman. It's a really fun read to read those early comic books and see all of these influences. And when I say all these influences, I mean Emma Goldman is one of his influences, and he met and talked to her. As I've already said, you know, he meets a lot of these very powerful, very intelligent people of the times. We're talking about 1929 forward, and it's just incredible to see how that influenced everything that he was doing. And that's pretty much it on him and her powers. When did the Invisible Jet come in? That's one thing I always kind of missed out on. Mike, do you know when the Invisible Jet does come in?
Yeah, her first appearance. She actually uses the Invisible Jet to bring Steve Trevor back to the world of man. She also has
at that point?
It's an invisible plane. I don't know if they call it a jet or not. I don't recall it having propellers, but I'd have to go back and take a look at that.
Oh, I'm just wondering because, you know, we're talking about the first appearance of the plane that it says here was 42, but I'm just doing very, you know, quick survey of websites. So I'd like to know when it became a jet or a plane. It's interesting to me that, you know, this jet or plane kind of predates some of the later jets and planes. I could be totally wrong.
She was able to control it telepathically. At first she had to fly it, but then later on she had a telepathic control over it until eventually when George Perez took over, they were like, let's just get rid of the jet and she can just fly on her own. Because for a while there, they had her ability to glide and stuff, but now she can just fly.
Yeah, when did she start flying? I missed that one too.
Yeah, that was when George Perez took over. They just gave her the ability to fly. I guess it was easier for them to draw that rather than try to figure out a way for her to constantly be standing on the plane doing superhero stuff in the air.
An excellent point. Oh, well, that just about does it for our background. And let's talk a little bit about some of our favorite episodes with that Wonder Woman and comic books that Wonder Woman show up in.
So if you're out there and you go out and see the Wonder Woman movie, or you know, you're with a kid and they see the Wonder Woman movie and they want to learn more about Wonder Woman, there's a couple comics you can go pick up and just start reading, and you don't have to worry about the whole back history. If you're an adult, I'm going to suggest Grant Morrison's Wonder Woman Earth One. You can pick it up on Amazon for like $10. It's a good story. It gives you the basic history of Wonder Woman. Grant Morrison loves comic book history, so he enlists a lot of the details from the Golden Age into this retelling of the Wonder Woman origin. If you're trying to buy it for a kid, though, you should go for The Legend of Wonder Woman. I reviewed it earlier this year, last year, when I in the front of the Lawn Box. It's finished now. They have it out in hardcover edition in time for the movie. It is a great retelling of the Wonder Woman story. It's focused in on World War II. It's got Etta Candy and the Holiday Girls. It's got everything you need, and it's perfect for a younger reader who wants to start reading Wonder Woman.
Well, that's great. Tommy, do you got anything that you'd like to add?
And if you want a slightly different version of the Wonder Woman story and a different version of the DC women characters in general, you can also check out DC Bombshells, which has a totally different take on all of the DC women.
How about you, Josh?
Nope. No magic, no space, no DC.
But Wonder Woman is all magic, right? She's based on mythology.
Mythology, but I don't consider Thor a magical hero either, right? He's just, you know, he's a mythological figure, but I don't put him in the same category as Doc Strange or Swamp Thing or those kind of folks.
Then I challenge you, sir, to go pick up Wonder Woman Rebirth, the first volume. It's by Greg Rucka and Liam Sharp. Liam Sharp is one of the best artists out there. His artwork is phenomenal. And Greg Rucka is telling an amazing story in the Rebirth comic. Pick up volume one. And if you don't like it, sir, I will give you your $10 back.
Okay.
Because that is a comic that starts talking about Wonder Woman, and it's steeped in mystery. Greg Rucka is doing an excellent job on his current run. So they also have the second volume of Rebirth is year one, because he's doing two different storylines at the same time, because Wonder Woman's now getting published twice monthly. So if you want to start collecting Wonder Woman, the Rebirth title is the best way to go, and both those stories have been great. Unfortunately, this is the last month for Greg Rucka's run on Wonder Woman, and it's switching over to a new team, but it was phenomenal.
I just want to say something we didn't really mention much, and that is the old TV show with Linda Carter. I love that TV show. As a kid, Linda Carter was Wonder Woman for me. The only other time I was exposed to Wonder Woman was at the Super Friends cartoon, and she was great in that, too. So the television show portrayals were always pretty good, but I really, really like Linda Carter. I know I'm showing my age with that.
No, I'm guessing you were exposed to Linda Carter a little more than once.
I would actually say that Linda Carter was exposed to me more than once, if you just go by the TV things. And you guys remember the story when I got in that fist fight at a Linda Carter cabaret show?
We do, but the listeners probably don't.
So
it's not a good story. Yeah, we'll just all say yes, and they'll move on.
So I was at a Linda Carter cabaret show. This is only about 7 or 8 years ago. She's still terrific. She's still very funny.
Tommy, it was more than 7 or 8 years ago. It was more like 10.
Really? You're going to begrudge me 2 years of my memory? All right, fine. It might have been about 10 years ago when I was living in San Francisco, and I go to a concert, and sitting next to me is a guy wearing a Miss America sash. So I'm interested. I look over and I ask, "Hey, man, what's with the sash?" And he says, "This is the exact sash that she won, Linda Carter won, when she was Miss America." And I say, "That seems unreasonable." That you bought it on eBay, and that's her sash. And I turn back to the stage and start watching the show, and he starts yelling at me, "Hey, man, are you ragging on my sash?" And I'm like, "No." And he starts making a big scene. Linda Carter notices the scene, and I say, "Hey, let's just take this outside." And I think I could talk to the guy. So I take him outside, and I say, "Hey, I didn't mean anything by it. I don't want to get into a fight." And the guy says, "Oh, we're in a fight." And then I hear someone yell, "Hey, Bruce, is this guy bothering you?" Now, my name's not Bruce, so now I know Bruce has a lot of friends. So Bruce has like 5 or 6 friends who come out, and I'm like, "All right, time to run." So we start running all the way through San Francisco with these guys chasing me. Now, fortunately for me, they were all smokers. So I actually had time to call my friend Mike. Josh, did I call you too during this chase?
Yes.
So I called both Mike and Josh. Josh, who was in Massachusetts at the time. Mike, who was in New Orleans at the time. Nobody was in close proximity to come and help me fight Bruce and friends. So we lead on this merry chase all through San Francisco. Finally, I lose enough of them that I'm like, "All right, I'm going to stand and fight." I grab a garbage can. I hit the first guy in the face, and he's like, "Hey, what are you doing?" I'm like, "I thought we were going to fight." The guy goes, "No, man, I just wanted to know what was running." And that was the end of the fight. I was a little too drunk to find my way back to the plush room in San Francisco to go back to my seat. Plus, I didn't want to get in another fight with Bruce, so that was the end of the night. But on the plus side, I believe I skipped out on about a $200 bar tab.
Now, if you had come away with the sash.
That's true, because that was the actual sash that Linda Carter won at Miss America that he bought on eBay. Bruce, if you're listening, you're an idiot. And that's also
Bruce,
why I don't...
It's not the real one, because I own the real one.
He's wearing it right now.
I bought it on eBay. Yeah. It looks lovely. Actually,
it's also the reason I no longer drink Powers Scotch Whiskey. Because that's what I was drinking that night, and I was super drunk. Too drunk. All right, I guess that takes us to the front of the long box then. Mike, what do you got at the front of the long box?
At the front of the long box, I have the Death of Hawkman featuring Adam Strange. When it says featuring Adam Strange, it should just say Adam Strange starring in The Death of the Hawkman. Because it's not really a Hawkman book. It is an Adam Strange story. It's all told from his point of view. They are fighting Despero, who has for some reason become really ultra incredibly powerful to the point that it's kind of ridiculous. If you are an Adam Strange fan, I suggest you go pick it up. If you are not an Adam Strange fan, but you are a Hawkman fan, I say avoid this because it'll just tick you off. So, LT, I recommend you avoid it. But other than that, it's not a bad story. It's just not a great story. I'm not going to spoil it. If somebody is an Adam Strange fan, you can go out and check it out.
Well, all right. I guess that takes us to the back of the law box. Tommy, what do you got back there?
I have Kingdom Come by Mark Waid and Alex Ross, way back from 1996. This features some absolutely fantastic art by Alex Ross, and it is primarily a Superman story. In it, Superman has basically given up on the world and retired, and he has been convinced to come back and kind of guide the heroes of the world that are not really paying attention to the innocents or just fighting for fighting's sake. And he's kind of taken charge again and forced the heroes to give up their ways and take heed and pay attention to the people that they should be protecting, and protecting the innocent and making that a priority again. And in it, Wonder Woman features pretty predominantly. She has been cast out of Paradise Island and has been denied her birthright because she has failed in her mission to bring about positive change in the world. And it's a fantastic storyline of an aging superhero world where all of your favorite Justice League superheroes are old and are either retired or coming out of retirement to kind of change the world once again from the near apocalypse that it is on the brink of.
Well, that sounds great. What year did that come out? I'm sorry, I zoned out for a second.
1996.
Seems longer than that. I remember that comic book from a while back. And it was a good read.
It is. It's a fantastic read, and the artwork is incredible.
And if you're a fan of the Spectre, that's a really good one, too, because he plays a major role. Kind of as a witness, though, not as an actual participant. Although I think the main character is an old man who used to be the minister or pastor or something for Sandman, Wesley Dodds, but I can't remember what his name was.
Yeah, it does pretty much have a very biblical theme running throughout it, in which the Sandman has visions of the coming apocalypse, and his dying breath, pretty much he transfers all of that to his pastor, and his pastor has to kind of been taking with the Spectre to kind of bring these visions to light.
Well, that sounds terrific. For my little point on social justice, I just have a book to recommend that I think a lot of people will get a lot of fun out of reading and a deeper insight into comic books, and that is The League of Regrettable Superheroes by John Morris. It's a fun little book that goes through some of the stupider superheroes that came around, including Arm Fall Off Boy, Blimp Boy, War Nurse, a lot of characters that we talk about often when it comes to regrettable superheroes or just superheroes that kind of maybe should never have been made. It's super cheap to pick up the Loot Crate version. Loot Crate did a reprinting of this and sent it out in Loot Crates. So you can pick these up for about $4 or $5 on eBay. And the original books are a lot more expensive. So grab the Loot Crate one just so you can read it. If you're an avid collector, I'm sure you can find a good copy still for around the $30 or $40 range. But the Loot Crate ones will get you all the things you need to do for academics. A real fun read. Do any of you guys have the original book?
Not I.
No, it's It's on my Amazon wish list, but I have not bought it yet.
Well, like I said, Loot Crate just about a year ago came out with their own copy of it. It's a total reprint, hardcover, super cheap, because a lot of the guys who get Loot Crate aren't as into the academic side of comic books as we are. I'm sorry, that was a little tangential. Speaking of tangents, Josh, do you have a tangent for us?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I can be more tangential than the Sash story, but I'll give it a shot. I'm actually going to be less tangential. I'm gonna stick closer to comics today. So
that was totally about Wonder Woman. That's what we were talking about. You prick. Go ahead.
Anyway, so I actually was at my mother's house yesterday, and I actually pulled one of my, I think, the last box of comics out of my mom's house to go to my basement. So I was sifting through it today to see if I had found anything good in there. Ooh, and there was some good stuff. I found Deadpool number one, Frank Miller's Ronin number one. I had two mint condition sealed X-Men 133s and 134s. And I think one of my my two big scores were some of my two of my favorite Mighty Thor issues. One was the Mighty Thor Avengers Assemble 390, which is after Captain America loses his he's just called the Captain. But it is the first time in any issue that Steve Rogers lifts Thor's hammer. Great issue. The other one, which I like even a little bit more, is Hulk 385, and I think this is the prototypical Hulk versus Thor issue. I mean, the Hulk picks up a train and throws it onto Thor. I mean, the whole train. Not just one car, the whole train. Because we all know those little things that connect all the cars could totally handle that weight. But anyway, so I think that's one of my favorite issues of, like, just, like, powerhouses. Just, it's, I mean, the comic has no plot whatsoever except for a Hulk smash, Thor can't back down, and it's basically the entire issue cover to cover of Hulk fighting Thor. So what is your favorite just mad throwdown between either two heroes or a villain? A comic book with as little dialogue as possible where it's just one big throwdown combat.
You're going to have to say that out loud, Tom, because
I know. Actually. So what you couldn't see was me holding up Tales of Suspense, Iron Man and Captain America number 76, the very first, well, actually the very second issue with Batroc Z Leaper in it. And this is the reason it's the second one, and the reason it's my more favorite of the comic books is because this is the first issue where Batroc Z Leaper makes it onto the cover of a comic book, and as which is exactly where he belongs on every comic book he's ever in. I'm a huge Batroc fan. Batroc and Captain America have one of their best fights ever in this comic book. It's a showcase of how intense the French foot fighting style of Savat can be. Now, even though he's not French, of course he's Algerian, he has still mastered this foreign skill to him with incredible adroitness. Batroc is the master of this foreign martial art to him, and it's a great issue, and the fighting scenes are really a lot of fun. One of my favorites, probably not my absolute favorite, but one of my absolute, it's up in the top 10. And it was handy.
And it was handy.
I'm going to cheat a little bit, and let's go back to, historically speaking, Captain Marvel versus Superman. That has always been one of my favorite rivalries, not only because in comics it's been played out a few times, but more importantly, it played out in civil litigation as DC Comics sued Fawcett Comics for ripping off Superman, when really a lot of the stuff that Superman ended up adapting was stolen from Fawcett Comics. I've always been a big Captain Marvel fan, a.k.a. Shazam. And one of my first earliest comic book memories was Justice League of America 137, where they actually had the big red cheese versus the big red S, where Shazam and Superman are going to fight. And I was so excited, and they really rip you off in that comic book. It doesn't happen. But where the battle does happen, where it's awesome, is in Kingdom Come. I don't know if you guys have heard about that series, but it's excellent. It's by Alex Ross. The Shazam Superman fight.
I hear it's highly recommended.
that fight between Shazam and Superman rocks.
It did. It truly did. Because Shazam could do something that Superman couldn't. And that was yell Shazam. And
I'm
bring the
sure
thunder.
Superman could have yelled Shazam.
Yeah, there's nothing happens. He just looks like a jackass staring at a
He just looks like a jackass.
Shazam, Shazam, Shazam.
Whereas when Captain Marvel does it, the lightning comes.
Bring the lightning.
Bring the lightning.
In your face.
Tommy, you got a fave? So I don't know the issue or number, but there were definitely a couple of Iron Man issues where he went all out against Crimson Dynamo that were pretty good fight scenes. Other than that, there were definitely some fantastic Avengers battles against some of the supervillain groups, especially some of the Zodiac fight scenes I thought were really great.
So I got to say, the issue I dug up, Thor 385, is one of my favorites. And my other has to be also one of my favorite covers of all time, The Incredible Hulk 340, where it's just Wolverine's claws and the Hulk's reflection in them. That is just a fantastic issue.
I'm not sure when it was, but the first meeting of the Hulk versus Wendigo. Now, that was a great fight scene. That went on and on and on for pages. And that was a great fight scene. Do you remember that one, Mike?
I've read some later comics, but I haven't read the first fight between them.
That's an Incredible Hulk issue, though, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, don't tell me you have that one too, Josh.
I do have that issue. Yeah, I have that Hulk issue where, ooh, yeah, it's the first appearance of Wolverine and Hulk, and Wendigo's the third party of the combat triangle.
That's the one. That fight scene goes on for a long time, and that is a really good fight scene.
Yeah, that has, one of my favorite panels of Wendigo ever, where he's just, the silhouette in, the misty woods. That's one of my favorite panels of Wendigo ever.
Scary, too. I mean, it was, that was a good one.
That was a good one. That's a good mention.
Yeah.
What about the classic Wolverine versus Sabretooth battle in the early run of the Claremont series?
Yeah, that's why, 213, 214 or something? Yeah,
something
that's a good,
like that.
That's a good issue. Yeah.
Oh, we're forgetting one of Josh's favorite fight scenes. He didn't mention it on this one, but the X-Men versus the Reavers down in the sewers. There were some good fight scenes in that.
Those were the Marauders, not the Reavers.
Marauders, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a Wolverine versus Sabretooth battle there also.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of. But I do like the one where Forge turns his leg into a rifle to pick off the Reavers from long distance on Muir Island. That's beautiful.
I need that guy's leg.
No, really. I need it.
I'm not kidding around. I know this was done in a movie, but give me my leg.
So do you think that's where the inspiration for the Grindhouse pictures machine gun leg came from?
I'm going to say unfortunately no. But I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the Grindhouse stuff.
I think we could make a white paper on that, though.
Absolutely.
There's some research to be done.
There's research to be done.
Hold on, I'm going to get Robert Rodriguez on the phone.
Ring, ring. Ring, ring. Ring, ring. Hello? You're a racist if you think my voice should have sounded different.
Maybe Cheech is in all of his movies. I know where you live, Cheech, if you're listening. You're probably not, though.
I doubt if your old friend from San Francisco, Cheech, is listening.
Probably not.
He's probably way too busy stalking Don Johnson with his vendetta.
Well, Cheech, if you're listening, I'm more than happy to help.
Yeah.
Stalk Don.
Nobody
Don
likes Don Johnson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was kind of
all right. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, seriously.
That's right, the Long Box guys. All right, so we've called out now the Divinals, L7, and Don Johnson. If you're listening, form a supergroup and come at us, bro.
That's right. Come at you,
I thought
Spider
we agreed
monkey.
Not to call out L7.
Oh, yeah. We don't want to call out L7.
Yeah, they already knocked one of us out. And if you name the guy they knocked out and you write into Lucky Bastard, what can they win?
This month, they can win Wanted by Mark Millar, which has also been turned into a film. But Wanted, a really good graphic novel by Mark Millar.
All right, so if you send us a question or just an email to luckybastard at
outsidethelongbox.com.
Or you name which one of us got knocked out with a giant dildo at an L7 concert once, you could win that comic book.
It's up for grabs.
Yeah. It's a great
comic. Speaking of winning a comic book, I just, this is totally tangential, but I just won an eBay auction. I picked up the original 7 issues of Angel and the Ape on eBay from the 1968 series. I am so excited right now.
And how many people bid against you?
Irrelevant. I have the entire series now.
Irrelevant. I've been trying to pick up some of the inferior 5s online, and I'm having trouble. They go up pretty quick. You bastard!
I just picked up all 12 issues.
You son of a bitch! You outbid me, you dumbass! We were bidding against each other!
How was I to know that was you?
Who else wants to get the...
T-Strange could have been anybody.
You moron. We got into a bidding war for... I'm going to go with moron.
How much more did you have to pay, Mike?
I got up pretty high.
Yeah, I did. Before I bailed, it got pretty high.
Well, Tom, it's a little off topic, but there's a really great comic book store in Worcester that has a large stock of back issues called That's Entertainment. If you want, I could try looking for it sometime.
Please do, my friend. Please do. And Josh, what's your favorite comic book shop?
Oh, I'll check out the back issues at Friendly Neighborhood Comics, because, you know, that place is clean.
And I myself will go to Davis Square here in Boston, Massachusetts, and take a look at the back issue boxes of Kamikaze. That place is well-staffed, and everyone's real nice.
You should also ask our good friend and number one fan, Chris Mitchell, the owner of 99 Issues in Mobile, Alabama, if he has any inferior 5, because he's got a lot of good Bronze and Silver Age stuff.
Yeah, we should definitely ask him. We should have him on the show again. We had him once, I believe, and we should have him again. He's really funny. Well, that's kind of bringing us to plugs, because we just plugged our favorite comic book shops. Does anyone else have a plug?
Today I'm going with our brand shiny new website. You can go to outsidethelongbox.com or thelongboxguys.com. And if you're shy about emailing us, we have a form you can fill out on the website for the Lucky Bastard drawings.
We also have another way you can reach us. You can leave us a review on iTunes. We just have a new one that was this past week by Browser Time. It says, "The guys are both knowledgeable and I assume drunk. Great listening, good info, and lots of fun." Well, Browser Time, you are right on both subjects.
Good call, so Browser Time.
Yeah, if you want to leave us a review at iTunes, we greatly appreciate it. That ups our traffic and makes iTunes more likely to recommend them to other listeners. So we would always appreciate that.
And if you'd like to just send us a tweet over at the Long Box Guys, outside the Long Box, at the Long Box Guys, just send us a private message. I will make sure you are entered. And this week we've been talking a lot about comic books and overseas, the trip overseas with Donald Trump, and how this might bring up pop the biblical apocalypse. And we're hoping it doesn't, but it might.
I would like to plug IanLino.com.
IanLino.com?
IanLino.com.
I think I know those guys.
IanLino.com. IanLino.com. Purveyor of fine t-shirts and other geeky things, such as stained glass prints, posters, and Johnny Skywalker rocks glasses. Your scotch tastes so much better in a Johnny Skywalker Rocks class.
I can attest to that. That is a great class.
We should also thank Kirby Crackle for providing us our geek rock music. You can check him out at kirbycracklemusic.com. Or if you're too lazy to type all that in, if you go over to our new website, there's a link to kirbycracklemusic.com on our website, along with a bunch of other people that we really like the Nola Nerd Couple. In addition to that, you should check out Cheryl Jones's podcast, Movies Made Me. It's a very interesting podcast where they talk about five movies that have shaped one's lives.
Speaking of going to many cons, we're going to one. Josh, I, and I think LT is going to Massive Con. Josh, what are those dates?
That'll be June 24th and 25th at the Worcester Centrum.
That's going to be a great time. We're going to be manning the table. We're not going to be doing any panels. We submitted. We might do a panel. We might not do a panel. We have a few people to talk to, and we're going to interview people in cosplay. We're going to talk to people. We're going to sign people up for the mailing list. We're going to have a great time.
And I believe it's called the DCU Center now.
And if you want to see a video of that, check out our YouTube channel. Just search for the Long Box Guys.
I think that'll just about do it for tonight. I just want to thank everyone for coming in again tonight and having a drink and talking about comic books. I can't think of a better way to spend a night than chatting with you guys and having some drinks. Mikey, you got any parting words of wisdom for us?
Yeah, go see the new Wonder Woman movie. Let us know what you think.
Tommy, how about you?
Wonder Woman. Dun, 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 dun.
Josh, just a quick question. I just want to make sure. Is this your sector?
I would say a wink is as good as a nod to a blind man, eh? Eh? Say no more?
Hey.
Say no more?
Say no more.
And this definitely isn't my sector.
And don't forget what I always say. Don't diss what you hate. Just promote what you love. And have a great night from the Longbox guys.
Friday night at the moon's full glow, I was out at the club with the music thumping. Over Thunder, a Gray Malkin Lane, as the bass bumped off the side of Snake Mountain. Jim on the stage with the hologram girls. Next up, Alison Blair to light the star of a night at the bar at the end of the world that my mind can't erase. There were 10 in the band, and the Thundercats said, roll over, roll over. There were 9 in the band, and the Amazon said, roll over. They hopped in the jet with the growl and pow. Roll away, roll away, roll away, roll over. Final call came, there were shops all around with the gummy bear juice and the get-a-fix potion. Feeling all right, we broke into the night. Dagger headed in on transportation. Where to go next? Some said, some said, some said. But I knew in my head that those itty-bitty bears wouldn't do, so we settled on my place. There were 8 in the bed, and the tiger shark said, roll over, roll over. There were 7 in the bed, and the rescue ranger said, roll over, roll over. So we all rolled over and both fell out. It was back to the sea and the trees for now. Roll away, roll away, roll away, roll over. Not one, not two, but Powerpuff Girls. We were in the club tossing back Johnny Bravos. I danced off my pants with a fly pepper and who kept massaging my hand. I took her to my land. I'm like the Fred Flint. She's Diana Prince. I could be the Bruce Wayne crusading these chicks. Now the fourth one, she looks like Daphne. The night's still young and my carpet's shaggy.
That is what I've been shooting for. Awesome.